Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
Sam Ellinger of the Kansas City Star joins us. This time over the phone. And I can only assume that this is because Sam felt so uncomfortable with the childlike squabbling that took place between me and Jake last week when he was in studio, that Sam decided, you know, I'll just do it over the phone this time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was texting with him. He's like, yeah, man, I got some family in town. Can't come into. He's not even out of town. He's just like, I can't make it into the studio this week. When's Steven back?
True or false, Sam?
False. I'm sorry to say. That would be a better story. No, I just got a bunch of family in town, and I'm trying to make everything work. You know how that goes.
Yeah,
did
no,
I miss anything, though?
Well, so far we haven't screamed at each other today.
No.
That's disappointing.
Yesterday, though, I told Jake as he was getting hot under the collar to, I don't know if that's the right word. He was getting fired up. Yeah. And I said, Jake, calm down.
Yeah, whoa.
Oh, boy, that was not the right thing.
When has that ever worked, though, Sam? Like, when have you told someone to calm down? They're like, oh, okay, I'll calm down. It doesn't work.
An excellent point. No, it's an excellent point. You know what you don't want to do is try that with your wife.
I was just thinking the same thing.
I'm kind of like Nate's wife on the show.
Oh, man. I was thinking, like, because poor Sam, like last week when at one point I told Jake to be quiet so Sam could talk.
Interrupted me to tell me that.
And Jake threw his phone up into the air and stormed out. And Sam looked at me in the commercial break and said, that was real, wasn't it? That wasn't just you two, like, for radio purposes.
No, that was not played up. That was real. That's a real phone throw.
And that was, because I think, like, part of the reason why I hope this works when I come on with you guys is that, like, we kind of live by similar life mantras, which is, like, don't take anything too seriously.
Yeah.
And I never do, so I just assume that everything is just a joke. And I thought, like, throwing the phone up was like, ah, ha, ha, look at Jake. He's acting like he's really mad at Nate. And they just stormed off.
Yeah, once the headphones get tossed, I'm really mad because these are expensive headphones. I don't want to break them. And
the headphones reset me a little bit, but then you gave him, I don't know if you remember this, but you gave him a look.
Yeah, there was a look.
A stop.
As he walked out, it was the look.
Yeah.
It was the look. As you turned right down that hallway, like you came out and then turned right down the hallway, and you gave a look. And I was like, ooh, that is real.
And I'm not coming in studio with those two crazy bastards.
When Sam said that to me, I thought to myself, like, I remember sometimes as a kid, I'd go over to, like, a buddy's house, and my buddy's, his parents would, like, have a fight, like, right in front of me. And yeah. It's like, I'm in someone else's house, and they're having a fight, and I just kind of want to back out and go somewhere else.
Just disappear.
Do the old Homer Simpson into the bush.
And I thought, that's probably how Sam feels right about now.
No, I know that feeling. I was, like, as a kid, I know that feeling. But then last, whatever that was, Monday, I guess, I was just like, I want some popcorn.
You didn't want to leave. You wanted to pull up a chair. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I don't know if we're going to fight today or not. Well, it has to happen organically. We don't plan that stuff. What do you want to talk about, Sam?
What do you got?
Well, first of all, what's going on with your family? How was Christmas? Is everything going good?
Great. Everything's going great. Yeah. I mean, it was so our oldest is 3. Mm-hmm. He'll be 4 in a couple months. So this is like the first, you know, he got it last year, but this is the first Christmas where, like, he really gets it. You know what I mean? The first Christmas where he, like, had, you know, presents in mind and stuff like that.
Like waking up and being like, oh, did Santa come? And then that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the first little. And, you know, I know it'll be, like, it'll get a little bit better every year, right?
Yeah.
Right up until the point where it doesn't get any better.
Right.
It's been great. They've both been really sick. So I spent, like, yesterday at the doctor's office with both of them, and our one-year-old rolled off the exam table. So I almost needed to, like...
Oh, no.
Well, we came in here for a cold, but he, like, fell, and it was, like, a loud fall, and he cried. And then I was like, his name's JB. We call him JB. And I was like, JB, are you okay? And he just looked up and goes, ha, 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 ha. Like, all right. All right. All good. What about you guys? Good Christmas?
It was great. My kids are 8 and 5. And so I would say I'm right in the wheelhouse. Like, it's,
yeah.
I don't think it can get any better terms of, you know, the magic of the holiday season. There was some priceless exchanges that I had with my kids this year, that you like you want to rush to a like your Moleskine diary or whatever and write it down, you know.
Right. Wait, what kind of diary?
I don't know. Is that Moleskine? Is that not a? I thought all you writers had Moleskines. Is that not a thing?
I don't know. I've never heard of that.
I don't know. My wife gave me one when my son was born, and every once in a while, I think to myself, he just said something that I need to go write that down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She made it seem like it was a writer's thing, and you're the writer, not me. So I don't know.
No, I just, man, maybe I need one.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? Now I have an idea for
Isn't
Christmas.
Is Moleskine a brand?
I think it's just a brand.
Yeah.
It's a diary okay. That's got like a.
They have planners and stuff too. I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
But
all
right. A couple.
It's all digital these days.
So part of me feels like, you know, these aren't my stories to share because they're my son's. Like, he's the one saying these things, and maybe it's not fair for him to have his quotes aired out over the air. But you know what? He was born into my family, and we don't keep
That's
any
right.
secrets here. So a couple moments, like little things like, you know, my 5-year-old daughter overheard my wife and I talking about someone who was kind of acting like a bit of a jerk at my wife's work. And out of nowhere, my daughter just chimes in. Well, he better change his attitude or Santa's not bringing him any presents, you know, and just boom, right into the conversation. I thought, you know what? Maybe she'll be on the naughty list. Who knows? And
there
then my
go.
Son, this was the one that was like the precious moment where I got to put this in the notebook. He came to my wife on Christmas Eve and he said, I need to write a letter to Santa. And Kelly said, well, honey, you've already told Santa what you want for Christmas. You've written him a letter. I think he gets it. And he said, no. And then all of a sudden he wells up with tears running down his face. And we, you know, we have one of those, an elf that comes every year and hides in different places around the house and goes yeah. back and reports to Santa about behavior. And the kids know they're not supposed to touch the elf, you know. And all of a sudden his tears in his eyes and he said, I was the one that knocked over Rudolph, and I let you blame Ophie, and I didn't say anything. and you know, Kelly said, well, I think Santa has a way of knowing, you know, if that's a big deal or not. And he said, no, I have to write him a letter. And so we get home, you know, after church on Christmas Eve night. He goes into the dining room all by himself, and he's writing this letter out. And he's drawing pictures for Santa. He's doing all that stuff. And, you know, it's got all kinds of it's in second grade spelling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, he apologized to Santa for knocking over the elf. It was an accident, whatever. But then there was a P.S. at the bottom of the letter that just said, I really believe in you. And it just like one of those moments, you know what I mean? Like it just like it, your heart just, it's just jello at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And what was really cool is Santa wrote him a note after he left him presents. He wrote a note back to Benny and we had a nice conversation about sometimes how good it feels to just get something off your chest, you know, like if he, mm-hmm. if he had gone to bed that night, just thinking about that, you know, wondering if he was going to be punished for that at some point, you know, he got it off his chest and he wrote it down and he felt better. You know, it was like one of those, I don't know. It was a moment. It was one of those moments.
Yeah. No, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. 8 and 5. They're at that age where the magic is at its height and the understanding is there all at the same time. And you feel like there's this fleeting thing about it. So yeah, I'm excited for what you're going to, you know, encounter in the next few years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I am too. He still talks about it. Like, he's always like, if you ask him in June, His favorite colors are red and green because it's Christmas. You know,
there you go.
He's really into it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cool.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, what do you got planned for New Year's? Are you traveling? Are you working? What are you? What's your schedule like next weekend?
Yeah, I will be probably just in a hotel room in Denver.
Right.
New Year's.
Nice.
So I'm like, I hate to say this because like I feel like everybody says it, but I kind of like New Year's has kind of lost its. Felt like New Year's was kind of a college to, you know, maybe 25 kind of time for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So me and my wife, we do this, I feel like it's perfect. We, just get takeout sushi. There's this great sushi place just right down the street, take out sushi and just sit on the couch. And if we make it to midnight, that's cool. And if we don't, we don't. It's just like, you know, build a fire, like all that stuff. So I'm a little bummed out, you know, I'll miss that. But, look, like I think about this all the time, and none of this is a complaint about my job at all. I'm lucky to have my job. I know that. I realize that every single day of my life. But last year, the Chiefs played on Christmas, and this year they played on Christmas Eve. And I consider myself, it is such a lucky thing that last year that game not only was at home, but at night on Christmas. So it was fine. And this year, you know, at home again on Christmas Eve. Like if either of those games are on the road, you know, I would have hated that. And so New Year's Eve in Denver, let's go, especially if it means Patrick Mahomes is playing.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to choose between spending New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve on the road, especially at our stage in life, there's no doubt about it. And it was Christmas Eve, an early game. So you mentioned it. Let's start there.
Yep.
Patrick Mahomes, he's playing, right? He has to.
I assume they're going to say that today, one way or the other. And I don't want to say shocked, but I'll be very, very, very surprised if he's not the guy. You know what they might do too is split. You know, give Mahomes a half and give Bray a half, something like that. But I'm expecting Alex Smith to be inactive on Sunday, and I'm expecting Patrick Mahomes to be the starter. There's precedent too. Remember, you know, the game in San Diego.
Yep.
And they didn't play a single person.
Right.
You know what I mean? That was, and they still almost won. It was, you know, not only it was irrelevant for the Chiefs, but the Chargers were playing. You know, they had to win that game to get in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you wonder, you know, in baseball, there's sort of a code where, you know, even if you're out of it, if the team that you're playing is competing for something, you play your guys in September, you know, if you're out of the playoff race. And so I didn't know if that would translate at all in Andy Reid's mind a few years ago. But if he didn't play anybody then, I can't imagine he's going to play, you know, his quarterback that has had, you know, the season of his life and risk anything against Denver. I'll be very, very, very surprised about that.
Yeah, and that quarterback is – with the way they're running the offense now, he's taking hits, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sure is. Yeah, there's no question. Yeah, and God, there's so many. And this, you know, this is what happened in Indianapolis last year. But, like, you know, when he starts scrambling, he has a knack, you know, 9 times out of 10 or 99 out of 100 to avoid the hit, you know, to either get out of bounds or to get down to the ground, like, you know, a millisecond before, you know, it's too late. But like we saw in Indianapolis, that's on a foolproof system. And, you know, I just to risk and look like I've said this on your show before. I am as excited about Patrick Mahomes as anybody outside of the Mahomes family. But if you get your quarterback after he's 4,000 yards and was it 28-5?
26-5, I think.
26-5. Mm-hmm. If you get him injured, you know, in a meaningless regular season game right before the playoffs start, that's an unconscionable coaching mistake.
Right, right. There's just no reason for it. And to go back to your point about the precedent, you know, if you remember, not only did they rest everybody, they played at Indianapolis in the playoffs, and they came out of that of the gates on fire in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any concern, well, you know, rusty, you don't want the guys to lose their rhythm or whatever. If that's the memory that Andy Reid has is, yeah, they lost that game, but it wasn't because they were rusty. They were dominating that game, and then they blew it at the end.
Absolutely.
So I don't think he has any fear of that.
Yeah, and not just protecting the quarterback, but, you know, they've got some other guys who could use a week. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm thinking mostly here about Justin Houston, but there's also guys, Benny Logan, you know, Eric Fisher's been banged up. He's been bad. You know, maybe those two things are related, but he's been banged up. Kareem Hunt, mm-hmm. I would want to get like rested and fresh. I mean, they've got a lot of guys on that team that could definitely, you know, I mean, every team does at this point, right? Week 17 of an NFL season, but, you know, especially going into the playoffs and just every postseason is important. I get that. But this one, you know, this is going to, in a lot of ways, define these 5 years of Andy Reid, you know, like, you know, restored some credibility and erased, not erased, but, you know, moved past some shame that he took over in this franchise. But now we're back to the mid 90s, right? Like now we're back to, you know, you can get in the playoffs, but you can't do anything after that. And, you know, they need every little edge they can get. Baltimore won't be an easy out if that's who it is. And you know, sure as hell the division game in presumably Pittsburgh or New England won't be an easy out either.
So the Kareem Hunt one is an interesting one because I'm with you. I'd put him in bubble wrap. I wouldn't play him a single snap. I would rest him. I think that, you know, rookies talk often about how much more substantial the workload is in the NFL and that it hits you, you know, because they play so many more games, the season's so much longer, not to mention the competition's better. But
yeah, the hits are harder, yeah.
Yeah, and he gets hit three times every, because he never goes down on the first hit.
Right.
But he's got a chance to win the rushing title. Does that, if you're Andy Reid, because I know what Ned Yost would do. Ned Yost would do everything he could to get Kareem Hunt the rushing title, right?
Yeah, he would. Yeah, you know, he'd feed him. He'd get 40 carries on Sunday.
Yeah,
if Ned was coaching. No, I don't think he'll do that. I just don't. I just and you know what? Like I think that as cool as that would be, right? The rushing title. You know, I think the guys in that locker room would be a little bit disappointed if that's how Andy went. You know, like, what are we doing here? Are we trying to win the rushing title or are we trying to, you know, do something else? Not to mention, right, like, you know, he could go for 150 yards, but if Todd Gurley goes for, you know, 170, it doesn't matter.
No doubt about it. We'll take a break. We'll talk more with Sam Mellinger right after this on the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've got Sam Mellinger on the phone as the Chiefs get ready to play the Denver Broncos on New Year's Eve. And we hope and believe that we're going to see Patrick Mahomes make his Chiefs debut. Meanwhile, Sam, former Chief Jamal Charles, who once infamously said that he always dreamed of being a Denver Bronco, is asking for his release. As he was inactive for the Broncos last weekend. He hasn't had a carry in their last three games. And he wants to play. And right now, the Broncos have said that's not something they've thought about. The Pittsburgh Steelers just let James Harrison go, and he was signed immediately by the New England Patriots. If there's any chance that the Broncos might release Jamal Charles, would the Chiefs or should the Chiefs have any interest in bringing him back to this team?
It's a really interesting question, right? Like, because the James Harrison thing makes sense for New England. You know, it's like almost like a spy, right? you know, that whole thing. This makes sense for the Chiefs because, you know, for Keem Hunt, is banged up and, you know, you don't have to worry about like a guy that doesn't know the system, right? It does make some sense in that way. And I assume that that's what he has in mind as well when he says that, right? You know, where else would he be wanting to go? Where else would he feel comfortable? You know, all those things. So I think it does make sense. You know, assuming, you know, they could use some depth at that position, right? And it wouldn't make a huge difference football-wise for the Chiefs, I don't think. You know, because, I mean, keep in mind, like, no matter what people remember about, like, if you close your eyes and think about the Jamal Charles that you remember, that's not the Jamal Charles that exists right now. You know what I mean? And so the Chiefs cut him because they didn't think that he was worth it, and didn't sign him when he was, you know, readily available. You know, they made it very clear that they didn't think he was worth a roster spot at that time. Now, his you know, context changed enough that they might reconsider that. I think so. I mean, I'd be shocked if they're not at least looking at it, you know, just again, just for depth reasons. But, you know, it'd be interesting. It'd be fun. But it like, it'd be a bigger, how do you say it? Like, it'd be a bigger story for people like us and people listening than it would be the actual football that would take place. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be, oh, Jamal Charles is back, but he'd get, you know, four touches.
Yeah. I mean, if Jamal Charles could still play, you would think that he wouldn't be inactive for the Broncos. Now, Jake did point out something, that they stand to save some money by him not playing. I mean, he would be due $100,000 bonus if he got to 500 yards. You know, he's not going to get there after not, you know, really getting any carries the last three games. He had all sorts of incentives put into his contract. So I guess you could say, well, once the Broncos knew that they weren't going anywhere, and if he's not, you know, maybe that's part of the reason they're not playing him right now, I suppose.
It could be, but I mean, you know, when he's had touches, he's what, like 4.3 a carry, something like that.
Yeah, 4.3, which
isn't bad.
No, it leads the team.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, C.J. Anderson is 4.1, and then, you know, Devontae Booker's 3.7. So, I mean, he, not by much, but, you know, but 4.3.
Sure. He's not, you know, I guess what I'm just saying, like, I feel like, oh, Jamal Charles, and people have, you know, 2013 Jamal Charles or 2000.
Right.
I get his big years competing, like 2011 maybe. You know, and that's just not 2011. He's out with an ACL. But, you know, that's not the guy that the Chiefs would be getting. Now, would they be getting a useful piece? I think so, for sure. And you know, you talk about the Broncos saving, you know, really what in the NFL is, you know, a couple nickels. And that's all it would cost the Chiefs to take him. You know what I mean? It's a very low cost, you know, you don't have much to lose here situation. I'd take a look at it for sure.
Yeah, I would too. I don't know. I mean, look, first the Broncos would have to grant him his wish.
Yeah, I think. I mean, the Patriots, when they got Harrison, I think they paid $59,000, which is like his last game check. Like, that's all they had to pay to get him.
Yeah.
And you know what? To go back to that, you said just a spy. The thing is that's concerning about New England is, I think it's more than a spy. I think he's going to play.
I think he's going to make a sack against the Steelers.
Very like possible.
It would be so Patriots
what's that?
Of them,
I mean,
you know?
That's what it says about where the Patriots' defense. I know it's improved, obviously, from what we saw at the beginning of the season. But that's still, if James Harrison, he played 40 snaps for the Steelers all year long.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to see well over, you know, 15 or 20 snaps in this last week of the season.
If we think the Chiefs have issues on the edge in terms of pass rush,
oh yeah,
it's child's play compared to what the Patriots have been going through.
Right, and that's, I mean, that's why they obviously picked him up. You know, they play a 4-3 there, so he'll play, you know, probably left or right defensive end, and they don't, I mean, they don't have a lot of quality depth on that defensive line, so that's going to be interesting. That's, I mean,
that is what they need.
Yep.
The other thing that you keep in mind, too, with a guy especially like that, and I think Jamal, too, but especially like James Harrison, is just like the pride, right? Like, he's fresh, you know? Maybe the Steelers are right that he can't play anymore, but maybe the Patriots are right, you know, that he's got something in him. And, you know, I think maybe one of the differences is the Patriots, all they need is basically two games out of him, right?
Yeah.
Division game, AFC championship, and then you're in the Super Bowl. I mean, they don't need much. They just need a few bursts.
Yeah. I think that the Jamal Charles thing would be interesting too, because it could kind of, he could come back to the team, the only team he's really ever played for. You know, it's kind of sad the way things ended here with him making the comments about the Broncos and all that stuff. And it could be like this triumphant return. Like, I never really liked the Broncos anyway. You know, right. Like, it just seems like it would work out. But I have no idea if the Broncos will, you know.
I mean, look, why would they do that? Like, what would be the benefit for them?
It would really just be out of, like, decency, right?
And that's not going to happen. You think John Elway's going to do something decent for the Chiefs?
Well, yeah, I don't know if there's any contract, like if they cut him by a certain date, would they be able to save more money? I don't know.
I mean, I doubt that. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Not before the end of the year, I wouldn't think, though.
I guess if somebody else picks him up, then you don't have to pay the rest of the deal. I don't know how that works, you know?
Can we also talk about how strange it is to hear, like, when's the last time you heard a player, maybe I just have a short memory, but just say, I wish the team that I was playing for right now would release me. Because I want to play for somebody else. Like, that does not happen very often.
Yeah, you hear guys demand to be traded.
Yeah.
You know.
Latavius Bryant. Yeah. But even that.
Out of here. Man, that's a bizarre thing. That has to be what he's got in mind, too, right?
Well, the article, alluded to that, you know, if they released him, then he'd have time to sign on with somebody that could use him for the playoffs. I mean, who?
Yeah, and I know that I'm looking at this from a very Kansas City perspective, but I'm just kind of wondering if the Chiefs, you know, were 4-11 going into the last game, would he be saying this? I don't know. You know, that's got to be what he has in mind, I would think.
I would definitely think so. And I mean,
he regretted that stuff. Like, you know, he was trying to ingratiate himself into, you know, to a new fan base. Compliment John Elway and blah, 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 blah. But as soon as he said that, I feel like he was, you know, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, like, that's not what I meant. And, you know, the Players Tribune thing, you know, that came out the week before, before they played here at Arrowhead. You know, he's still, you know, there's no loyalty in the NFL, but he very much, I think, cherishes, you know, relationships and his career and kind of how he's thought of in Kansas City and realizes that doesn't exist for him anywhere else. I don't know what's in his head. You know, you can't read minds or anything, but I'm convinced that if the Chiefs were out of it, you know, that he wouldn't be saying that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Right now, Vance Joseph says that that's not something they've even thought about in terms of of letting him have his release. So we shall see. Can you do one more segment with us, Sam, or do you got to go?
Yeah, man. Yeah, let's do it.
I want to talk Royals because there's been so much movement among the free agents to be or not.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about what that means with Sam when we come back after this. All right, one last segment with Sam Mellinger. Hot stove talk or not so hot. I don't know. What do we make of the lack of movement so far? Does it surprise you, Sam Mellinger?
It does. I thought going into the offseason, I thought that Mike Moustakas would end up in Anaheim, and I thought that Eric Hosmer would end up in Boston, and neither one of those things are going to happen. Anaheim has Zach Cozart, and they've got him to to move over to third base, and the Red Sox, for some reason, I don't know if it's a luxury tax concern or what, signed Mitch Moreland to play first base. So, yeah, I'm surprised. And, look, I still think that it's likelier than not that both of those guys, especially Moustakas, will be playing somewhere else next year. But, I'm kind of plagiarizing myself here. But if you were going to write a story in which the ending was Eric Hosmer coming back to Kansas City, this is exactly how that story would begin. Because, you know, this is exactly what had to happen, is his market had to come down. And the fewer bidders there are for Hosmer, the lower the price. And Boston was the one team that made the most, you know, sort of positional sense, ballpark sense, you know, sort of where their team is right now. I'm really surprised that they went that direction. I thought Hosmer was a great fit for that ballpark, a great fit for that division. I thought he would have put up really big numbers, but, now you've got him out, and still, unless I'm missing something, the two teams that are the most connected to him are the Padres and the Royals. And, you know, now is he going to go? The Padres aren't going to win, at least not right away. So if you're going to do a rebuilding project, like, why not stay where you are? Now, all that said, I still believe that the Mets, Cardinals, someone like that is going to jump in at some point and offer a little bit more money than what the Royals are doing. And at that point, if that's how it all happens, and look, like, it would obviously not be the first time I've been wrong about something, but if that's how it all happens, now you're asking Eric Hosmer to take less money to play for a team that he knows is going to lose, at least in the first 2 years. And, you know, free agents typically, when they're on the market, they want the most money and they want to win. And so you're asking him to do neither of those. And the Royals can manipulate some things and, you know, front load the contract and give an opt out, stuff like that. But I still think it's unlikely, but gosh, it's a hell of a lot more, or at least I think it's a hell of a lot more likely now than I would have a month ago. And I think the Royals believe that too. Like, much more importantly, I think internally, Dayton Moore, JJ Pecola, all those guys, believe that it's much more likely now than they would have told you a month ago.
So at what price would it make sense for the Royals to bring him back?
Well, there's so many ways to answer that. And I'm not trying to, like, I feel like Alex Smith facing the rush now. My mind is, like, overloaded.
Are you getting happy feet?
Yeah. But look, like, I think that he's a $20+ million a year player. If you look at the guys who get those kinds of contracts, either on extensions or in the free agent market, I think he matches up in that, you know, no pun intended, ballpark. For the Royals, you know, with 6 years at $125 million, something like that, makes sense, especially, you know, and give him an opt-out after 2 or 3 years. It doesn't make financial sense, probably. But, you know, the other part of that is, look, you know, even if you forget that David Glass bought in for, what, $92 million, $94 million, whatever it was, and Forbes has them listed at $900 million. And, you know, Forbes has been proven to be low, if anything, on these franchise values. Even if you forget all that, I don't believe what Dayton said. I think that there are, you know, some accounting tricks being used to say that the Royals have lost $65 million in the last 2 years. I just don't believe that. They've also got a new TV contract that'll kick in, I believe, after the 19th season, that should get them an extra, you know, depending on who you listen to, an extra $30 to $50 million every season. They also got, depending on who you listen to, an extra $25 or $50 million, a one-time payment, the $25 to $50 million. When Major League Baseball sold, you know, BAM, the advanced media. Now, everybody got that. All teams got that, not just the Royals. So that's not just a Royals thing. But my point is, the Royals are not hurting. You know, I don't believe, no matter what David Glass says publicly. So could they afford it? Yeah, I think so, absolutely. Now, does it make financial sense for them? That's a different question, because I believe, and I know I'm extreme, but I believe the smart thing to do is to blow it all up. And I think you need to be losing. I think you either need to be drafting in the top five, or you need to be competing for the World Series. And everything in between is, you know, spinning your wheels. So to me, signing Eric Hosmer means you're spending money that you won't have in the future on that contract, and he's going to help you win more games than you otherwise would. And, you know, to me, somebody that helps you win, you know, 68 games instead of 65 or 68, you know, 7 games instead of 61 or whatever, that's not a good player, because I'd rather be drafting first than fourth, or I'd be rather be drafting third than sixth. So, you know, look, it's a fascinating thing. I know I'm giving you a really long answer, but it's because I've been thinking about this a lot, and I have to write something about it. Like, there's so many things going on, because, you know, from, you know, just a personal sentimental side, and Dayton always gets irritated when people say he's sentimental, but he's absolutely sentimental. And, you know, to let that guy go, if the price is reasonable, and to embrace his full rebuild, I think that's going to be really hard on Dayton, you know, just sort of personally and how he believes. Also, the front office really believes in leadership. It really believes in, you know, guys who play hard, and that the young players need a model, and what better model than Eric Hosmer, who's won a World Series, and not just won a World Series, but, you know, been in the middle of that World Series and hit in the middle of the lineup in a championship ball club, and had to dash home in Queens, and had to triple off the wall in the wild card game, and, you know, is, you know, damn near perfect in the community, and, you know, a good example for all those guys. They really believe in that stuff. Now, whether you do or whether I do, that's a different story, but they do. So it's I've probably taken up the whole segment with this answer, but there's a lot of moving parts on here. And I think the Royals, you know, going into the offseason, expected and were going to be comfortable with being outbidded for Eric Hosmer. You know, that's part of why they did the big celebration for all those guys. You know, that last homestand of the season,
that
was a going away party. And, you know, that's how they believed it was going to go. And now things are changing a little bit, and they may have to put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the long answer, because that's why I asked the question. You know, what Eric Hosmer is, quote unquote, worth, and what makes sense for the Royals could be two completely different things.
Yep.
You know, and I find that to be, like, it's almost like they're getting put in an uncomfortable position here as the market keeps shrinking up. But you're right. I mean, we haven't heard teams like the Mets and the Cardinals. We've seen people link the two, but I don't think we've seen any reports that, oh, the Mets are coming hard after Eric Hosmer, or the Cardinals, for that matter.
I haven't seen it, yep.
Which makes me wonder, why not? Like, what are they waiting for? Why wouldn't they be interested?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, interesting, fascinating dynamic between, you know, sort of what old school baseball people think of him and what the metrics think of him.
Right.
You know, like, it has become like something of a running joke among, you know, some, of like how much FanGraphs like just rips Eric Hosmer, like, regularly, like every week it seems like there's another post on it. And I love FanGraphs. I think, like, I look at FanGraphs all the time, and they just crush him all the time. And, you know, there was a story, I think, last off season about, like, if the Royals just DFA'd Eric Hosmer, you couldn't blame them, you know. And, you know, but then old school baseball people just talk about him, you know, reverentially. And, you know, this guy is, you know, a winner, and he helps you win, and he does all the little things, and even look at his numbers. He had a career year and all those stuff. But that's another part of it, too. So I don't – what I'm not sure of, like, are those teams, Mets, Cardinals, you know, the Indians might make sense now, you know, some other teams, just kind of waiting and, you know, letting somebody else make the first move on that market and, you know, trying to get what could be, you know, 6 years, 140, you know, now maybe if you wait it out, maybe you can get 6 years, 120, maybe even 5 years, 95 or something like that. You know, like, you never know. I wonder if teams are just kind of waiting things out and seeing how low the price can get.
Gosh, which would be worse as a Royals fan, to watch Eric Hosmer playing for the Cardinals or the Indians?
Right.
I mean, if you had to watch him play for the Indians, they're going to be, you know, one of the teams, most likely the team to beat in the division for the next couple years. You got to play him 18 times or whatever. But the Cardinals, oh, man, that would be tough, you know?
You know what else is out there? And this is something that a scout sort of friend, I guess, of mine mentioned a week or two ago, was, you know, Mike Moustakas going to the Yankees, but on a short-term deal, on like a one-year, a two-year, something like that, so he could hit the market again a little bit later when maybe things will be a little bit more favorable. And when I heard that, how effed up would that be for Royals fans? Your guy not only playing for the Yankees, but now if it's a 1 or 2 year contract, that's not going to be a $50 million contract. Now you don't even get a comp pick for it.
Yeah. You don't get any comp pick if it's under $50 million, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean,
and that would make sense. I think it would not make sense for Hosmer to sign a 1 year, or for Moustakas to sign a 1 year deal, I don't believe, because then he'd be going into the market at the same time as Machado and Donaldson.
Right, but a two-year
deal
get the next year. Yeah,
yeah, that would make that could make some sense. That would suck.
yep, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Sam, I appreciate the long answer, and I think our audience does too, because they get tired of my long questions. So this time I decided to flip it up and go short question, long answer, and I think the audience appreciates that. Thanks,
I'm
man.
Here for you.
Well, happy New Year, and enjoy the Rocky Mountains.
You and Jake get along, all right?
We're doing fine so far today. We'll see if it lasts.
No, we're not. Shut up.
Okay, yeah, I hate you.
There it is.
See you, buddy.
All right, see you guys.
That's Sam Ellinger. You got to be on your best behavior because we have a special guest in the control room there with you.
Andrew. Andrew's in the house.
Is it Andrew or is it Drew? What do you go by?
Yeah, Drew or Andrew?
Andrew.
He's Andrew. Coming to see how the real pros go about their business.
How
learning
the sausage
from the best.
Is made.
He is seeing how Jake makes the sausage.
Hmm.
Pretty cool.
How old are you? Okay, 15.
15 years old.
Freshman.
Man. Where at? What school, Drew? Andrew, sorry.
Olathe Northwest.
Olathe Northwest. We have a job shadow
go
in
Ravens.
Here.
Go Ravens.
The Ravens, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Not Baltimore Ravens,
no.
Not go them.
No. By the way, that school didn't exist when I was in high school.
I have to be honest, I didn't know it existed now, so I'm learning.
He goes, whoa, man, it opened like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude. Is it time for you to leave yet?
See?
You got to go. This show ends at 9.
Definitely
now.
Did not exist when I was in high school. Oh, boy. When's Gabe coming on?
Now, I guess.
Huh? What?
No. Next.
Gabe DeArmond next. With his smiling face joining us on the show right after this.